Ongoing support for KBMF comes from Copper City Physical Therapy, located at 3718 East Lake Street on the north side of Big Sky Senior Living. Working to help clients restore movement, strength, and independence, Copper City Physical Therapy can be reached online at coppercitypt.com or by phone at 299-2450.
KBMF 102.5 FM, the do-it-yourself radio station.
Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy, your host. And today our guest is Anafi Wahed, and she is the CEO and founder of The Flip Side. Remember that you can find us on Facebook, or you can also email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. We're always looking for entrepreneurs and people in business who would like to share their story, especially if they're using business as a force for good on the planet. That seems to be the area of focus of our guest today, for sure. And thank you for listening. This is Heartstock.
It didn't say
This is Heartstock Radio, and our guest today is Anafi Wahed. She is the CEO and the founder of The Flip Side. Hi, Anafi.
Hi, Carol. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being our guest. Can you give our listeners a little intro here of what it is that you do at The Flip Side, and what is The Flip Side?
Sure. So our website is theflipside.io. And what we do is we scour the news, all liberal, conservative, center, and libertarian websites, and try to find thoughtful op-eds and commentary. I think everyone these days feels a little bit overwhelmed with just the amount of news that's happening, and also the number of media outlets that are out there. You know, the internet has really democratized the media space, which is great, but it can be overwhelming for the average person who just wants to know what's happening and also, you know, wants to listen to a smart perspective. So what we do is we scour the news, we scour the commentary, and try to provide our readers with thoughtful and informed perspectives on the main topic of the day. So it's one topic, it's a 5-minute digest, and our newsletter goes out each morning, Monday through Friday.
And it seems that polarization has become a larger and larger issue for all of us here in the United States. And that doesn't seem to be going away or getting better. How much did the impact that polarization was having on you personally, how much of that played into your decision to found The Flip Side?
Great question. And I think the first thing to point out is, yes, it's, you know, it's gotten worse in the U.S., but it's actually not exclusively to the U.S. Globally, we actually see polarization becoming more and more of a problem. And that's, again, partly due to the rise of the internet and then the rise of social media. So once upon a time, we had to interact with our neighbors, we had to interact with our coworkers, and people were, you know, forced to sort of moderate their perspectives when they're, you know, speaking with others. Now we're physically isolated, right? Geographically, liberal. liberals are moving to cities and conservatives are tending to move to the rural and the suburbs. But also digitally, we're isolated because via Facebook, via Twitter, we can really just curate who we're speaking with and even the news we're getting. So once upon a time, we had, let's say, 3 or 4 TV channels and your local newspaper that everybody read. So there was this shared space. But now, you know, a person who is reading, you know, or who's watching Rachel Maddow all the time, and another person who's only watching Sean Hannity all the time, they're not going to be able to have a conversation. So I think this problem is global due to the fact that we have so many sources to choose from that we can essentially just pick what we like and tune out the rest. So I myself grew up in New York City. I was raised watching CNN, reading New York Times, and when I went to actually work for the Hillary presidential campaign in 2016, I was in rural New Hampshire talking to farmers, talking to folks who have lived very different, you know, lives from me. Prior to my work at the campaign, I actually spent 4 years in finance. I'm a CFA, that is to say I'm a chartered financial analyst. So my world, you know, having worked 4 years in Midtown Manhattan versus the rural farmers I was speaking with in New Hampshire, you know, completely different worlds, literally, but also in our digital spaces. You know, they didn't grow up watching CNN. They grew up watching Fox. They grew up watching other things and reading other things. So the flip side is really trying to bring together a plethora of those perspectives into a digestible amount. We make sure that the things we cite are informed, they're based in reality. These are logical arguments that each side is making that we think are worth hearing.
So what has been the response, and has this affected you personally? I mean, doing this sort of work, I would imagine, greatly expands your perspective.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, once upon a time, I was very sure of my political beliefs, right? I thought I knew it all. Oh, you know, I listened to Ezra Klein. I'm the smartest person ever, after him, of course. And now I'm discovering, oh, guess what? Policy is actually really complicated. That seems like a very, you know, obvious epiphany. But I think a lot of people are really convinced that the way they view the world is the right view. And so what's great about the flip side is that I'm constantly questioning my political beliefs, which is great. It's made me have to argue my points better, right? Instead of just talking to my liberal friends, I now, my co-founder is a staunch conservative. We debate all the time about various issues. Our team is made up of, you know, center left, center right, far right, far left, libertarians, moderates. And we're genuinely trying to create a space in which it's okay to disagree. And for me personally, it's been a wonderful opportunity to meet all of these people that we may share very different political views, but turns out we actually have a lot in common. On the other hand, there have been times where things have been difficult. I think in the Trump era, there are some people on both sides who think the other side just doesn't have anything valuable to say. In fact, according to the Pew Research Center, over 40% of both Democrats and Republicans each think that the other party is a threat to the nation's well-being. So there have been times where I've had very difficult conversations with people who I once was close to, and that's also been a personal journey that I've had to grow from and learn from.
So have you lived your entire life in New York, and did you go to school in New York?
Because I was actually born in Bangladesh, which is a tiny, tiny country that basically sits in the armpit of India. So I was born there, and I lived there until I was 8 years old. And then I moved to New York City with my mom. And so I entered third grade in the United States in New York. So since then, I grew up in New York City, went to college in Pennsylvania, Bryn Mawr College. If any martyrs are listening, hello. And then moved back to New York after college.
And what was that like, being an immigrant to the United States and entering school in the third grade?
Oh my gosh. I've actually tried to write about it several times. I've had a few op-eds published, and this is a topic I think I have a lot to say about, but it's almost too much to say. It was really fascinating because when you're 8 years old, you know, you're your own person, you have your own thoughts, but you're still sort of young enough that you don't totally understand what's happening. I remember being at the airport and all of my uncles and cousins and aunts were all hugging me and crying. And I was thinking, how far away could this place be? And my main thought, honestly, was that my mom didn't let me pack my Legos. And I kept freaking out because what if, you know, Amrika, this is what I called it when I was 8 years old in Bangladesh, what if Amrika didn't have a Lego store? So looking back, you know, just the thoughts that were going through my head as a little 8 year old, not understanding, you know, this giant move, you know, we were making is really amusing. I remember getting to New York City, landing at LaGuardia Airport, and my aunt who already lived here came to pick us up, and we're in the cab and just looking around, looking at the huge buildings. And so this was 1998, where girls in Bangladesh often didn't wear pants. So I'm like, oh my gosh, they're wearing pants like they do in the movies. How cool is that? So that was my first impression of America: yellow cab, tall buildings, and girls wearing pants.
And when you went to school, did you already speak English?
Kind of. I spoke broken English, you know, super basic things like I eat rice, right? So I was in ESL from all the way up until fifth grade. And I had a wonderful ESL teacher, a wonderful third grade teacher, Ms. Reyes, whom I still remember to this day. She was so kind and sweet. She paired me up with another Bengali student to sort of just help me get acclimated. The good news was I was very good at math, and math is the same no matter what country you're in. It was the reading that was really difficult. And I remember struggling, but, you know, I think when you're young, you just kind of adjust. And, you know, pretty soon I was pretty fluent. I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. I remember memorizing the lyrics to Backstreet Boys and NSYNC songs to try to learn English. So those are my go-to karaoke songs to this day.
And then kind of take us on your journey. Good at math, so you went into the field of financials. What?
Right.
And how did that evolve to, well, your experience on the campaign trail, obviously, but were there other influences that led to the flip side?
Sure. That's a great question. You know, I was typical first generation immigrant. I knew I had to find a well-paying job after college. And, you know, I did not want to go to med school. I didn't want to go to law school. And I thought, oh, finance. Okay. You know, sort of the path of least resistance. So I spent 2 years at the FDIC as a bank regulator. And then I was at Ernst & Young as a senior consultant. It was an amazing experience. You know, I learned a lot about the financial world. I can, you know, talk your ear off about the financial crisis and complex financial instruments. I got my CFA charter in the 4 years that I was in the industry, but turns out I didn't actually like it. And it was a really difficult thing for me to admit because, you know, this is a, you know, well-paying career. I paid off my student loans. I was, you know, doing very well for myself. And I was good at it, but my heart wasn't in it. And especially in 2016, I was finding myself reading the news all the time. And again, being, you know, very much a liberal, I saw the Trump candidacy as kind of an existential threat. And so I thought, okay, you know, here I am in my mid-20s, don't have any responsibilities. So might as well go work for a campaign now and, you know, try to help elect the first female president. I wanted to be able to tell my grandkids that, you know, oh, I knocked on doors for Hillary. So that's how that came about. I had a few friends who worked for the Obama campaigns and they had a lovely time. And I thought, oh, this will be great. But oh man, it was fantastic, but it was also emotionally exhausting. As you can imagine, the 2016 was, you know, a tumultuous year. So you have all of these people with very, very strong feelings about politics, and you knock on their door, and there they are, and they're just spewing all of their feelings out at you, right? It's, you know, you are the funnel through which they are going to express all of their thoughts. And I also thought, oh, okay, I'm going to go to the campaign. They're going to teach me about policy. It's going to be great. But it's not about that at all. When you knock on someone's door, they're not asking about, you know, Hillary Clinton's tax policy. They're asking about her email. They're asking about the Benghazi scandal and all of these other things. And I realized just how influential the media was in framing the topics that people cared about. And so it was really that experience that taught me two things. One, which I think everyone has sort of learned to some extent, which is that we are living in a media bubble, but also two, that the average person doesn't have the time, effort, energy, desire to read 20 op-eds. I am the type of person who reads a lot of news, but the average person is, you know, busy with having a life. They have, you know, kids to take care of or classes, or they're working two jobs, and this is just not a priority. So the flip side really tries to make it as easy as possible to get the true nuance of what's happening in a 5-minute digest. So that's where I think we're different from some other media outlets that say, okay, here's this 5,000 word essay that you should read on the complexity of the tax policy. How can we bring that to the average person who frankly has other more pressing priorities?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I would like to talk about a couple points that you touched on already, but hopefully we can dig a little deeper, you know, the whole fake news phenomena and Cambridge Analytica and yeah, all of that kind of good stuff that helps to seem to increase and create that divide even bigger and greater. So we're going to take a quick music break and we will be right back with more interesting discussion. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm your host, Carol Murphy. And we're speaking this evening. We've already been talking quite a bit and continue on with this conversation with Anafi. And thank you so much again for being with us and sharing all that you're doing at the Flip Side. I was hoping we could talk a little bit more about this whole phenomenon of polarization. And I just watched a documentary, The Great Hack. I don't know if you've seen it, but there now seems to be the ability for us to receive very, very customized feeds. So what I'm watching might not be the same thing, or what I'm getting on social media may not even be the same thing that somebody in the Midwest is getting, or that my other family members are getting. So we become, you know, we are bombarded by so much information that may not even be true. How do we handle this? How do we effectively fight it?
Right. And I think that's, you know, the million-dollar question. What you're talking about is called micro-targeting in the advertising space. So what that really means is you're able to fine-tune who your audience is on Facebook, on Twitter, on really any digital channel. So let's say it starts off innocently enough, right? Like, let's say I go on Amazon and I check out these shoes and I'm shopping for, you know, at Nordstrom for a bunch of shoes. Okay, 5 minutes later, I go on Facebook and, oh, look, there's the shoes I just searched for but didn't buy. So that can seem innocent enough when you're talking about shoes. But let's say I search how to make a bomb, right, to take a very extreme example. The next thing you know, I'm getting more and more content that is radical, that is focused on, you know, dangerous aspects. And, I mean, one of the things the FBI is doing is tracking the people who, you know, are watching these videos. Google did a really interesting experiment where they took the people searching for, you know, ISIS and all of those things and actually tweaked the algorithms to direct them toward videos that debunked a lot of the myths that ISIS is spreading. Now, we think of, I mean, obviously that's a good thing, right? We shouldn't allow people to get radicalized online. You see this both with ISIS recruiting, you see this with white nationalists, and then, you know, for the average person, you see this with the political targeting. So if you read Breitbart, you get more Breitbart. If you read the Pamela Report, you get more Pamela Report. So what Google did was say, okay, can we actually de-radicalize people with those extreme examples? And it showed that it could. Now, that's a good thing. That's Google doing a very good thing for the world. On the other hand, you can also see what that could mean if, let's say, the head of Google tomorrow decided that we should all be watching, you know, I can't even think of a commentator like Alex Jones, right? What if someone at Google decided, okay, we're just going to suddenly push Alex Jones to, you know, 300 million plus Americans tomorrow? That's a really dangerous thing. And that's something that we have to grapple with as a society. Facebook has, you know, nearly 2 billion users. Facebook is in some ways more powerful than many nations, right? What can Mark Zuckerberg do with that power? And I think the people who say, oh my God, how dare Facebook not censor political ads? I think they're really missing the point. Do we want Facebook to be able to censor ads? Do we want to give them that responsibility, that authority? I think that's the tougher question. They're making some progress. You know, they're coming up with guidelines and trying to be clear about, you know, who they're censoring and why and what criteria. But I don't think the general public is sort of keen on following those conversations. So we need to bring that conversations to the wider arena and not just have a screaming match of how evil social media is. I think that's been played out. Now we need to actually start talking about solutions. And the solutions are going to be in the gray area. It's not going to satisfy everybody, neither the people who think, you know, people should be allowed to search for whatever they want, nor the people who say we should censor anything that's problematic.
Yeah, and you throw into that mix, you know, if you've got excuse me, literally millions and millions of dollars to pay Facebook to spread your, whatever it is, propaganda of any sort, you know, then it becomes kind of an ethical question of who should be, you know, every person. It's no longer a level playing ground at that point. Only the ultra rich and the ultra wealthy are going to have the most influence and be able to spread their ideology,
so
whatever that happens to be.
It's both the money and the fact that you can actually go quite viral by being the most extreme.
Yeah.
So if you don't have money, the way you go viral is to say something incredibly offensive.
Yeah.
Or something just completely outrageous that people find outrageous, right? So it's encouraging both, you know, the money influence and the extremism. Now, this is actually a problem that Facebook can make better through sort of better design. So right now, they are really focused on engagement. So the more people are commenting, liking, sharing, the more that post is exposed to other people. Now, again, that encourages a certain type of behavior. They can instead choose to say, hey, this, you know, post has a lot of angry rhetoric. It has a lot of words that are problematic, whether it's the word kill, whether it's the word, you know, curse words, what have you, right? They can create criteria that says, look, if you're engaging in these types of rhetoric, we're actually not going to spread your message. Or they can say, you know what, we're going to focus less on engagement, meaning how much time people are spending interacting with that post, and more focus more on posts from your close family and friends. So rather than encouraging these posts that are coming up from people you met once in your life that are somehow your Facebook friend, you don't even remember why, you actually get more posts on your feed that are from your close friends that you interact with and message directly, right? Those are all design changes and tech changes that Facebook can make, but is, you know, choosing not to make, or is still thinking about it, or what have you. And I think that's the larger problem. We have a lot of people who are concerned, but not a lot of people who are coming up with legitimate ways to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm. So who are your readers? Are they also customers? If not, how are you funded?
Great question. So we're actually structured as a C corporation. We thought about going the nonprofit route, but given the administrative costs and the cost of setting up a nonprofit, having a board of directors with a lot of governance and oversight, we decided to go the C corporation route. In the media world, there's a plethora of ways in which media outlets are trying to survive in the social media age, and it tends to be a mixture of contributions from readers, advertising, free PR, etc. So right now, we're actually really incredibly lucky. Our readers come from all over the place. My old coworkers in the finance world, people who've seen me on Fox and Friends. I've had a few op-eds published in USA Today, The Hill, The Wall Street Journal. So we have a really wide range of readers. Everyone from tech people in California to people in Kansas and Missouri to my friends in New York City. And we're getting a lot of contributions from our readers directly. So we have a Patreon account, we have a PayPal option. At the same time, we're building out a way for companies to actually advertise in our newsletter to make sure that we're able to get the funds necessary to grow, especially in 2020 when polarization is just going to get worse. So because we want to be able to move ahead a little bit faster, we are going to be introducing advertising in a way that's ethical, in a way that says, hey, this is an advertisement, instead of, some media companies that hide their sponsored ad with a very, very, very tiny, three-word disclaimer at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. And how about your team? How have you accumulated such a great team? And what was that like building this very diverse team?
Great question. So my co-founder is a friend of a friend. I think I put up a Facebook post, speaking of Facebook, it's always in our lives, saying, hey, I want to meet conservatives. I want to talk to Republicans. Who can I meet? And so he was one of the people I was introduced to, and we clicked right off the bat. We're just both very analytical people who are focused on data and actually what the studies say. So when there's a proposed policy, whether it's the tax cuts or Medicare for all, we are less interested in the rhetoric and more interested to see what has actually worked in the past in other countries, in, at state level. So we get along really well from that aspect. And the rest of our contributors are coming from our talks at the Reagan Foundation or Harvard or Columbia, or just folks who've heard of us through word of mouth. So we have Joe, who's a city councilman in Maryland. He helps us out one night a week. We have Roberto, who's an active duty Marine, who helps us out. We have college students, Anna and Ronnie. We have Brian, who's in graduate school getting a degree in philosophy. So it's a wide plethora of people who say, hey, how can I help? How can I do something to actually help depolarize America? So it's been a wonderful experience. Our internship application received over 100 responses, and we didn't even advertise. It was just, on internships.com. So we're very fortunate that there are so many people willing to work on this problem and willing to work with us.
Mm-hmm. We've got about a minute and a half left, so I'm wondering if there's anything else that you'd like to share about your efforts, and how might people find you?
Great question. So I think you know, there are a lot of people who feel depressed or angry in today's world, especially with the recent events in the Middle East. And I think it's easy to sort of throw up your hands and give up, but I hope you won't. I hope you'll find, whether it's a local organization or frankly, even having a conversation with a neighbor to say, hey, how do you feel about this? How can we share our views and learn from each other and sort of work together to make the world a better place? Like everything from, you know, volunteering to clean up your local park to volunteering for a national campaign, I think is a good thing. I think it's easy for people to feel overwhelmed, but every action helps the world in some way. That's sort of my parting message.
Definitely. And how might folks find you?
Oh, right. Theflipside.io. If you want to email me personally, my name is Anafi, A-N-N-A-F-I, at theflipside.io.
Thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
Appreciate it. And we shall see you next week. This has been Heartstock. Peace.
KBMF 102.5 FM, where new music happens.
Welcome to KBMF New Music Show. This is Clark Grant sitting in for Daniel Hogan. Tonight we start off with British rapper Stormzy. This song, Own It, off his brand new record featuring Ed Sheeran and Burna Boy.
Body's on fire. Show me how to control it. And go ahead, you flip and get higher. Girl, I love how you roll it. I put my hand there. Hold it. I'ma be right by you. 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 Lighters up, lighters up, one time lighters up. Pulled up in the party when you saw me, I was lighting up my J. So go ahead and brighten up my day. Lighters in the air when you're lighting up the rave. And it's feeling like I met you here before. Girl, I felt your presence when they let you through the door. Never had a brother give you everything and more. So I take a little piece and then the rest of it is yours, me and more.
You don't dare when I don't tell you, but can you taste and I play? I know nowhere to you, they do me, with just this start out of my brain.
Loving when I put you in your place. I can tell you love it just by looking in your face. It's the way that you wind up your waist. I'm so in awe, girl. You never have to worry about nothing. You know it's yours. You know you're
on it. Girl, you just own it. Cause your body's on fire. Show me how to control it. And go ahead, you slip and get higher. Girl, I love how you hold it. I put my hand there. Hold it. I'ma be right by you. I'ma be right by you. I'ma be right by you.
Lights down for the one I love right now. You never look better. Forget our friends, girl. I love it when we chill together. We need nobody gonna feel what we feel together. She wanna kiss, I want another one. You got a sick vibe, I want it one on one. Up to now, nobody knew where I was coming from, but we got the same mind, so I don't wanna waste time. Bring it to me, my mind, that's what I need, that's right. Kissing your cheek one time. I used to love being alone, but now I can't stand it. Reaching on my palm for you to put your hand in, girl, you are the one. And I don't understand it, how you lighting up the room with your glow. Cause girl, you just own it.
Girl, you just own it. Put your body on fire. Control it. Go ahead, just flip and get higher. Girl, I love how you roll.